When someone does something wrong, in many instances, the first thought is how they should be punished. But a growing number of colleges and universities are taking a different approach. It's called restorative justice. It's voluntary and is generally used in conjunction with other more traditional penalties. David Karp joins me via Skype to talk more about this. He's a sociology professor at Skidmore College in upstate New York and directs the school's project on restorative justice. And David, first off, let's define our terms here. What exactly is restorative justice, especially as it relates to a college campus?
In general, restorative justice is about repairing or addressing harm. And so rather than focus on whether a law was broken or whether a policy was violated, the focus is on who was harmed, how are they impacted, and what are the obligations of those who caused the harm to take responsibility and make amends for that harm.
Does that usually entail both the offender and the victim meeting face-to-face and communicating in person?
Yeah, a very common practice in restorative justice is some kind of dialogue between the harm party and the person who caused harm. It's not essential, and there are many restorative approaches that don't include a face-to-face meeting, particularly when the parties don't want to do that or when it's not safe to do that. So really, it's a good way for someone who's caused harm to hear and understand the full impact of their behavior. And it's often something that a harm party wants to do to confront the person and really communicate clearly how they were impacted. So it's a very powerful way to convey the harm and then for someone to express, ideally, express remorse for it and take responsibility.
Are there certain types of offenses for which this is maybe more appropriate than others?
I don't think so. In fact, there's research to suggest that the more serious the offense, the more powerful or transformative the restorative justice process can be.
Have you been involved in cases where the parties have agreed to some kind of meeting, they want to talk about what happened, and it really just didn't go well?
You know, not every case is perfect, but that's rare. And if that happens, that's primarily a function of insufficient preparation. Much of the restorative process takes place before a face-to-face meeting. So individual meetings happen between the restorative facilitator and the harm party, preparing them and assessing whether it's appropriate to go forward. And then the same goes on the other side, meeting with the person who caused the harm, preparing them, helping them think through the questions that they will be asked when there is a face-to-face meeting. So it's pretty unusual for there to be a kind of surprise or backfire because we usually choose not to bring them together if things are not looking good.
How do you judge if the process is successful?
Well, usually it's the harm party. Were they satisfied? And do they think that the person who caused harm was held accountable? And then more broadly, it can be on a college campus, the broader community or the administration. Do they feel like there was accountability? The idea of restorative justice is that there is meaningful accountability, that it's active, meaning someone's going to take responsibility. They're not just going to receive punishment passively, but they're going to do something to take responsibility.
Do you find instances where somebody might be apologizing or saying they accept responsibility, and you just kind of get a feeling, or maybe the victim gets the feeling, that they don't really mean it, that they're sort of trying to take an easy way out and see this process, this restorative justice process, as a way to avoid being expelled or avoid, in some cases, going to prison?
Sure, that's what everybody worries about. I would say more often than not that people who participate in this process have a pretty sensitive radar on that, and they'll call them out on it and say, I don't think you're taking this responsibility, taking this seriously or taking responsibility. Typically, people come into these processes worried about what's going to happen to them. And so they're mostly focused on their own concerns, like, am I going to get suspended? And then when you actually present the impact of their behavior on others, they're able to see beyond themselves. And that's, of course, the goal.
Do you see any parallels between what you're doing with restorative justice and some of the efforts in states and even around the country at sentencing reforms to try to maybe take people who have broken the law and get them into treatment or counseling or something, as opposed to just sending them to jail?
Yeah, I think that there's some growing recognition that straight up punishment is not effective. It certainly is effective in communicating disapproval. So the goal of saying this is unacceptable behavior is communicated. And in restorative justice, we also want to communicate that. And it's usually by highlighting the harm that was caused. And so all those efforts are part of the recognition that while we may communicate disapproval, the efforts often backfire. Recidivism rates are really high. We generate resistance, not acceptance of responsibility. People want to minimize their role because they're trying to avoid the consequences. So we're interested in creating conditions in which someone can truly take responsibility for their behavior and not avoid it.
David Karp is a professor at Skidmore College in upstate New York, where he directs the school's Project on Restorative Justice. David, good to talk to you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.